I like to liken it to WebMD. You know, anytime you get a symptom and you immediately, if you're one of those people who immediately Googles
it. I am. I'm terrible. Yeah. I've died 12 times this month.
I like to think of golf swing the same way.
Dew sweeper girl, nothing I like better than walking around the streets of U.S. with you and enjoying a yacht runner.
If you want to get better at your game of golf, follow us to Dew Sweeper TV.
All right, joining us here on the tour coach from Cabot Citrus Cold Farms here for the Golf Magazine Top 100 Teacher Summit. My good friend, you've been on a million times from the radio all the way. Brady Riggs. He's bailed me out so many times when I didn't have any guests. Delivered great insight.
Yeah.
This is your first time on the podcast.
First time.
Yeah, perfect. Right here. Lovely. There we go. And Zephyr Melson with golf.com, Golf Magazine. You're all over the place in the golf content world.
Yep.
So appreciate you taking the time to sit in. It is warmer than being out there filming something.
It is.
Right
we
now.
Filmed something this morning.
If we could have filmed that inside, it was. Yeah. I'd have gone an extra 10 minutes.
I'm taking care of this first time.
Thank you, buddy. So I wanted to talk a little bit about recreational golf. Golfers of all skill levels. I think with content out there now, you guys put a bunch out. Embarrassed says I put a lot out. Thank you, Brady.
Yes, I do.
And you actually put a decent bit out. But I mean,
I have three over the last 6 months.
That's pretty good.
I'm on fire.
There it's all fire.
I'm on a roll.
But people want information and they want to get better. You made an interesting comment walking over here about how you kind of feel like the island for the misfit golfers, and has gotten some golfers who were later maybe had huge upsides, then had huge downs. And trying to get better. Talk a little bit about that. And I want to talk with Zephyr too, because you run across so many different teachers doing what you do. I think it shows you, though, that there's no one right way to do this. Right? And these people that get on there and they just argue that it's got to always be this way. It just isn't true.
No, I totally agree. I think, you know, when I was a young teacher, you think you know
you're
everything.
Not young still?
No, I'm not. I thought I knew the right way to teach everybody, and of course that was wrong. You know, we all make that mistake when we start. But the players I was working with, if they had complex issues, I was probably really equipped to handle them. If it was somebody who was newer or young and talented, I could help them along in their journey. But now, as I've gotten much more mature and experienced in golf, I feel like I'm able to handle somebody who's gone through the journey, the arc. You know, they might have started out a great player as a kid, gone really polished and professional and had success, and then maybe fell off and ran into hard times. You know,
yeah.
That's a complicated situation where you've got to deal with not just the physical things, but also the emotional part of the game and how to bring back the confidence. Maybe they have physical issues, they're dealing with surgeries. So that makes it more challenging in a way, but so much more rewarding, because people that have played really, really well in their life and then it falls off, they want it so bad again because they realize how much fun they were having, even though at the time maybe. So it's been great. I've really enjoyed that, this transition in my career, being people that are a little more challenging.
But I think that we're always, as teachers, trying to find things that motivate us. After we've been doing it a while, I mean, you see us in all different stages of our career.
Yes.
I think you find things that motivate you. Like, one for me, I don't know what, but like, I got crazy into like mentoring young coaches and teachers, and we'd be forced to have a bunch that come want to hang out. Like, that's inspired me to like keep trying to get better and to keep putting stuff out and doing stuff. And you travel all over filming great content, great instruction. What's it like? I mean, you have to see a million different approaches. What's it like being with top teachers, the best teachers, and on their approaches? And it's just you're a regular golfer. What's your handicap?
I'm about a 4 handicap.
Okay, so you're the type of person Brady and I have come see us all the time.
Yes.
Like, from your approach as a player, what's it like going and getting these tips and this help? And then how the hell do you still play golf?
Yeah.
I just gave you a tip on early extension, which you know me.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be screwed up. So, like, how do you deal with all
that? I like to separate my own golf game from my content, you know, because it's like the content.
That's got to be hard, though.
It is hard. But the content I film, I'm trying to make it broad and, like, something that can be helpful to people who are searching for tips.
Right.
And so it's like I try to, you know, I play with a lot of recreational players, a lot of friends, and I kind of see what people struggle with. So I'm like, okay, this might be a helpful tip. And then I go to you guys, I try to get those tips, and I'm like, how could this be helpful to them? But I try not to implement it in my own game because I have my own struggles, I have my own problems. And then I go see a coach on my own, and then I work on my own game in that way. Because, you know, you guys all, you know, we come with something like this, I'll get 25 different swing thoughts that people tell me. Like, and early on in my career when I would do this, it would be like, oh, come away from it. I go home to hit balls, and I'm just thinking 1,000 different things, and I'm standing over blocks. I'm like, well, I heard this teacher tell me this. This teacher told me this, and really, you can't do that. So I try to focus on what I'm working on in my own game with my own coach, whenever I'm practicing on my own, and then whenever I'm doing content, trying to essentially be a proxy for the everyday golfer.
That's interesting. I when you, as you were talking about it, I was thinking of back in my early radio days, I got to know and stuff with Peter Kessler, right? And obviously all of the, like what I've tried to do on my radio and even on this is kind of a version of what Peter did on Golf Channel back in the day, where he had a different teacher every week, right? But he loudly declares that, I mean, he was a scratch player and couldn't break 90 at the end of doing it from all of the info, right? And I think that what you just said, though, is the majority of recreational golfers, because they may not go tape content, but they go on that iPad or that phone, and they're watching 800 different teachers, some of whom, like, you're around some of the best teachers in the game. You don't have to be remotely qualified to put stuff out there. And people are like, you're at least able to say to somebody, this is so-and-so, and he's a great teacher, and he's done this. A lot of people will get information from things they can't. How do you deal with that as a teacher?
Well, it's funny because it just reminded me as we're talking about this. One of the reasons people end up in the situation where they used to be good and then they're no longer good is because of the information, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times that happens on tour. We both know a player who was very, very successful on tour, and all of a sudden somebody was chirping in their ear.
He'd sell real estate in Florida now.
Yes. And so, like, true story.
I'll give you a referral to it if you need a real estate down in Palm Beach.
So that will happen to players, you know, on all levels. And then imagine that struggle to come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you were really, really good and you weren't thinking about much and you owned your stuff. And then somebody else was in your ear, thought they had a better way for you to do it, and it took you away from who you really were as a player. And now you're lost, you're adrift, you know? And that process to come back to find yourself again can be one that you don't succeed in. But to get there was kind of my, one of the things I like to do, you know? And then with kids, I try to keep them as much as I can from diving into those places. And it's challenging.
I like to liken it to WebMD.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you get a symptom and you immediately, if you're one of those people who immediately Googles
it. I am. I'm terrible. Yeah. I've died 12 times this month.
I like to think of the golf swing the same way.
Wow, it's good.
Where it's like, if you have a symptom.
It's going to be the title of this pod. WebMD for your golf.
It really is.
Yeah.
If you have a symptom in your golf swing, you want to solve it. We're in the instant gratification era, so we Google it. And we, you know, all that's telling you is what's the top SEO result for your thing.
That means what's right.
You could be hitting a slice, and the tip on solving this slice could be totally legitimate. But it might not be the reason that you're hitting the slice.
Right.
So I like to liken it to the WebMD analogy, and I'm like, why would I, you know, treat myself for an ailment in my body based on what I read on the internet? It's kind of the same way.
That's good.
With the golf swing. So I'm like, okay, like, obviously you can get information on the internet, and but you have to be able to consume it in a manner that's intelligent, and also do your research and be like, does this person have credentials? And then at the end of the day, like, go see a doctor, go see a swing coach if you really want to know what's going on, because then they can prescribe you solution that is tailored to what your problems actually are. That's why the content that I do, you know, we can get content for free online from anyone, any swing coach, but what we want to do is bring in the best of the best, make high quality content that we can get to the audience that they know is coming from people who know what they're talking about, such as
you. Well, he knows this. When I started doing this, because I was actually used to be opposed to doing it, right?
Yes, you were.
But my thought was, because there were so many ones out there that weren't doing what you guys do, which is the best of the best and information, and it's geared, and there, when I thought there was a lot of stuff that wasn't very good, I was like, I think that there's a market for somebody that develops good players to be able to put out good, right? And maybe, and instead of chasing trying to get 100,000 views, you know what? If 500 or 1,000 people or 2,000 people that are really serious about getting better get to watch them, hell, that's fine, right? Right? You said something interesting a few minutes ago. You said about being a proxy for the recreational golf.
Yeah.
And I, what do you think, from being that person, what do you think are the biggest issues, concerns, or things we could do as teachers to help those golfers?
Ooh,
that's a pretty deep question.
Yeah, I know. You put me on the spot there, Tony. What, as what you guys do, what would be the best thing? I think, you know, broad solutions are generally better than, you know, obviously you guys know how to diagnose very specific swing flaws. But whenever it comes to content, sometimes the more broad it is, you know, the more people it's going to reach and the more applicable it's going to be. I mean, you know, you see 12 handicaps, I'm sure you could name five things that all 12 handicaps struggle with for the most part. And that's something that I've learned in the content world is, you know, me and Tony just shot something on early extension. People love learning about early extension because it's something that so many of those people struggle with. People love to learn how to add power to their golf swings. That's something that everyone wants. So whenever it comes to content, you know, the more broad you can get, the better it's going to be. But, you know, sometimes there are tips that are, you know, only going to help a handful of people. They're super technical, and it's, like, really interesting for the swing nerd. That's where it comes in, like, quality over quantity. There's no one right thing. It's important to balance both, which is, you know, a struggle that anyone in content can relate to.
Like, I was flying, and I went on. First time I'd never used any of that AI stuff where you can look something up with ChatGPT, and I did that Grok. It's on edge. And I just was like, I was making a decision based on, like, having somebody help us or whatever. And I put in my name and our content, right? Just see what it said. And it came back with, like, not one of the top clicks, but niche, one of the best in the niche for serious golf nerds or serious golf people, right?
Wow.
Like it, but I was like, well, that's pretty cool. And then it had things that said it thought we could do better, which I thought was interesting, right? Yeah. But I think going to what you said, one of the interesting things is one of the most, like, things that we get some of the most on the podcast where we get listens from recreational golfers is when we talk about things people can do to shoot lower scores without making a swing change.
Type
of stuff. Like, where if somebody says you can lower your handicap and you don't have to go change a whole bunch about what you do hit the ball, that stuff gets a ton. I would imagine for you guys, it's the same.
Well, that's the stuff that I actually feel qualified to talk about is, you know, things you can do in your own game to become a better golfer that's not changing your swing. Because, like, when it comes to swing changes and technique, that's where I defer to you guys at all times, because I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just a translator for you guys trying to help those people. But
we need translate sometimes, trust me.
But when it comes to, oh, like, here's a little trick you can do, here's how you can be a little bit smarter, I'm like, you know, I actually feel like I'm qualified to talk about that, because those are things that I do in my own game every day, and that I, you know, I see my friends do, and I try to help them and help steer them. And obviously, all these are ideas that I get from you guys, but those, you know, there are a lot of ways to, you could probably take an 18 handicap and help them shave 10 strokes off their game without even changing their swing all that much.
Yeah, I mean, Tony and I, whenever I do schools and whatnot, Tony, he likes to put me into practice.
Because you're the best at it.
So I totally agree with you about, you don't have to make technical changes to make profound changes to your ability to score.
Yes.
If you know how to train it. And I think it's a hard thing to film in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a tough tip, you know, to teach somebody how to do a combine properly and get the most out of it. It's much easier to, I think, to film early extension than it would be to go through the process. So it's a little bit more detail oriented in a way, but it's meaningful.
Well, I found in doing this too, like, if you're asking somebody to listen to a whole 30-minute podcast, you get a bunch of people that do it and drive it. Right, and whatever. But if you put out 1-minute clips where somebody can listen to you talk about how to practice, you'll get thousands of people
interesting.
Do it, right? It's interesting how it is. So as we kind of move towards wrapping this up, talk a little, what would be the two or three things that you see golfers can do to shoot lower scores without necessarily changing their swing? And I think your practice stuff's fantastic. I told Zephyr earlier, we were up there BSing, like, one of the things, biggest things I try to do is help my players of all abilities just learn how to get a little more out of the practice that they do.
Totally agree. I think it kind of ties together. So setup, where you aim, mentally matters. I don't care if your feet are perfect and all that. It sounds important, but I want you to know where the ball is going to land, and I want you to have an idea of where you want it to start on one side or the other, because that dictates everything that you're doing with your swing. If you want the ball to start to the right, you need to be moving a little bit more close to the target, more behind you, and vice versa. And that really matters in your ability to picture the shot that you're giving. So if you don't have a stick down to work on that, then you're being foolish. And you're wasting the time that you have to practice. A lot of people don't have a lot of time to practice. So that one little thing matters. And then testing your ability to miss in the right direction by doing a combine is huge, because that's what golf is. It's not how good your good shots are. It's how catastrophic your bad shots are. But if you can teach people that the left miss here is fine, they can miss it left, even if it's a lot, they're going to get around the golf course much better that way, score better, and neither of those are technical things to them.
Yeah, I like what you said there, Brady. I think something that people would be surprised to learn is that getting better, sometimes it's not about improving your good shots. It's about making your bad shots just better and less catastrophic.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, because, I mean, everyone can hit some good shots, but it's about keeping bad shots.
I'm going to need a wheelchair to tell you.
Yeah.
And then what I would tell people, how can you improve without changing your swing? Drill the boring things, the unsexy things. Setup, posture, aim, grip. Last winter, I decided I was just going to become obsessed with the fundamentals, and I had the most boring 3 months of practice. I would go in and just lay down an alignment stick and make sure the ball position was in the same spot every time, make sure my face was square before I was very intentional about my grip, about the club face, all that. And I was like, if I can control these things before I even take the club back, even if they're not, like, always perfect, just making sure that they're always consistent, then I know at least I have a consistent baseline, which is so much easier to work from a consistent baseline than anything else.
You said the whole perfect thing that I think Brady would agree, that we're always trying to get players that want to get better to be intentional about what they're doing, right? And I think that the biggest thing, if I sit and I watch golfers on the range hit balls, is that there's no real intent to what they're doing.
They just kind of hit right
and right, like, and they react to the ball they just hit, right? Yeah. So that ball went left, we'll make sure that one didn't go left, it may go way right, but they don't know, you know. And I think, like, that. How good was your year after the practice?
I mean, it was much more consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was boring.
It was boring.
But, you know, I came to that conclusion after coming to this summit, or that was my third or fourth that I'd come to. And I realized every teacher, whenever they start working with a student, before they even have you take a swing, they're always changing. You're always looking at the grip. You're always looking at the stance. You're always looking at the aim. And I was like,
yeah,
you know, like, obviously it's important for a coach to switch that, but I was like, if this is what they're looking at, like, how important is that? How important is it for us to be working on that? You go to a tour range, you'll see these guys. They've always got their alignment aids. They're always working. I mean, Scotty Scheffler is obsessed with his grip.
He's pretty good.
So it's like, if the best in the world are so obsessed with fundamentals, then why are recreational golfers not more into it? The answer is because it's kind of boring and not very fun to work on.
I would even tell you, as you go up the professional ranks, like if you went to a mini tour event range, you would see less stuff on the ground than if you went to an America's event, and less there than if you went to Corn Ferry. And if you go to a PGA Tour elevated event, you saw those 50 guys or 100 guys on the range, 95% of them would have stuff there. I think each level, I think one of the things the best players figure out is how to be intentional and take care of it.
Yeah.
I really do.
One last point of that I want to add. So, Tony, I want to ask you if you agree with this. If you had, this is a great question, maybe, tour players, great players, it's not, there's no magic. And I think this is Zephyr's point, you know. It's not like they do special things. The amateurs just have a lot more knowledge.
Yeah.
So if you can do the controllables, work on your setup, and start to knock off all the garbage that you've got, you'll have a much better chance of being repeatable.
Well,
a tour player is not doing anything. There's no magic going on. They just are really good at doing the few things that you've got to be really good at.
They just eliminate the variables.
Yes,
I mean, the fewer variables you have, the easier it is to be consistent. And like we said, it's just about consistency. You can hit the wipiest, ugliest cut, but if you hit it every time, you're going to be a good player.
Right. What I think, you know, you said about, like, that wasn't sexy. That
that's right.
Right.
And then you had mentioned, you know, people want that there's something magic. And I think if you really want to improve in this game, it really is just being committed to not being sexy. With there isn't one thing, and it's really just being very intentional and knowing your fundamentals, your details. Where does the ball need to be for you to hit your shot? Where do you need to be aimed? And I think if the more people would do the boring stuff, they'd enjoy the golf course.
Yeah, I've learned that the more boring my practice is, the more fun I have on the course, because the practice is boring, it's not fun. But then whenever I get out on the course, I'm like, oh, I shoot lower scores, and that's always fun.
So. Yeah, and like you said, I think too, one of the biggest things we hear from golfers is like the recreational golfer, higher handed, about how they can miss it all over. Well, you're probably going to miss it all over if the ball goes from up here to back here to aimed over here. How the hell do you know?
You can make the same. Yeah, you can make the same swing, but if the ball position is at the front of your stance one time, back of your stance another time, the ball is going to react in totally different ways, even if you make the exact same swing.
Exactly.
That's why you've got to get your baseline.
Guys, this was fun. Great.
It was great.
Thanks for taking the time. Zephyr, thanks for letting us pull you in here last night.
Great.
Good. That's awesome. Good. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
Good job, man.